Hello, I'm Jane Johnson, the founder of Careering Into Motherhood. We're going to be dropping this podcast weekly with a series of guests, some of which I'll be interviewing and others I'll be handing over the mic. Our aim at Careering Into Motherhood is to make life as a working mother that little bit easier. And I passionately believe that coaching and a supportive community are absolutely fundamental to that. It's why we have a partnership with over 60 different coaches who can help you with anything from changing careers to parenting children with special educational needs, going through divorce or other relationship challenges, to launching a business of your own. All the support and advice from our coaches is available on our website, www.careeringintomotherhood.com. And don't forget, the Careering Into Motherhood community is also available to you over on Facebook. Just search for our name and apply to join the group. We've got 11,000 other mums who will welcome you with open arms, and you can meet and engage with our coaches there as well. Now, without further ado, let's get into today's episode and let's get this interview started. My guest today is Ellie English. Ellie is one half of an executive coaching company that works within organizations to help assist with culture change and to create high-performing teams. Something very close to Ellie's heart is the concept of helping to avoid executive burnout, and she believes that at the heart of this is reframing our ideas as women of success. Ellie, I'm delighted to have you on the podcast today. It's always great to talk to you. We cover lots of ground, and I know we have a shared view on lots of things when it comes to women and work. So it's great to have you.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Jane. It's great to be here.
Fantastic. So we're going to be talking about whether it is time to reassess the way women see success. What are your thoughts on that, and why is this conversation really appropriate for now?
Absolutely. So you've probably heard a lot of the statistics. So at the moment, about 67% of parents and mothers in particular are actually experiencing burnout. So we've come to a part of, and a lot of that burnout is driven by the mental load. It's driven by wanting to have to be so successful, to be that image of that perfect mother, that perfect career person. And it's killing us. So for us to really be able to, you know, improve our well-being and also be comfortable and be in balance, we really need to reassess how we're actually seeing success and defining it from within, not what society tells us. And why this is important is, you know, we've had these conversations before, Jane. You've got, you know, a lot of societal conditioning telling us that we can do it all. You've got, you know, lots of people on LinkedIn talking about their executive thing and they're managing everything. It's all about efficiency. You've got, you know, the society kind of structures like childcare not being aligned and so expensive. And you've got school not fitting into work hours. And then you've got all of our unique challenges that we experience in the workplace. Like, you know, you've got microaggressions, which people think, oh, they're only microaggressions, but they actually have a massive impact on your career. You've got also the unique health challenges we go through, right? We think, oh, wow, we finally got our career on track when we get pregnant. And we're thinking, oh, it's okay. We come back and it's exhausting. Our brains change. And, you know, it's like, well, how do we now fit into what we did before when we have less hours? And also we're managing so much more now. And then we go into perimenopause and then menopause, then midlife. And it's like, how do we actually start to understand women's unique challenges in the workplace? Because it's not just about success, it's about women uniquely and through that lens. So it's really important for me personally. One of the key things I see in coaching sessions is at the heart of everything is I am not enough. So how do we help women be enough? And that's like, how do we start to relook at how we define success?
It's really interesting, isn't it? And I think from what I see, you know, in the workplace and also among our community, the Careering Into Motherhood community, in part, the pandemic and the change that that brought about in the world of work went some way to helping us reassess that view of success. As you say, is it
it's no longer time spent in the office mm-hmm. for everyone, let's say. It's no longer how much money I earn, and it, people reprioritizing certain things around health and wellness and so on. But it feels to me, and I'd love your thoughts on this, Ellie, it feels to me as though we've now got stuck in the quagmire once again, where workplaces are calling us back.
Yeah.
You know, we feel this pressure to be or to achieve or whatever it is. Even on social media, it's interesting you touched on LinkedIn there.
Yeah.
I see so many, what was a phrase for it? It's like pseudo bragging or humble brag, the humble brag. Mm-hmm. You know, we seem to have got back to that where we're almost telling women, you can be it all, you must have it all. And those older fashioned ideas of success. So how do you work with clients and even with yourself, with your own mindset to keep your view of success in check?
I love that. So I might actually just answer it personally because I've got a bit of a personal anecdote. So first of all, I think a lot of people get confused between what success is and what achievement is. And why this is important is achievement is very quantitative, linear. So for example, I got great A-level results. I did greatly. I did really well in my university degree. I then, you know, progressed through the organizations in a linear way. So what I see is, and this is for me personally as well, is, you know, you earn the money, your quantity, you look at what are their currencies. Currency is often, you know, money rather than time. So all of that stuff, it's very linear. It's very quantitative. It's very much like, okay, by the time I'm 30, I've got to do this, got to buy a house. So you're checking this off. And then when you have a child, you're going, you're defining success by quantitative things still, but actually success lives in a different part of your brain. Success is on the right hemisphere of your brain, which means it's more kind of intangible. So we're still defining achievement. We're still defining success by achievement. So what we need to look at is, okay, well, how do we actually redefine even, let's understand even what achievement is. And is that what I'm calling achievement? Is that what society is calling achievement? Do I really need to buy a house by the time I'm 30? Do I really need to be married with two children? And do I need to be in this director role or this other role that I need to be in to be able to tick it off? Is that my life or is that what society is telling me or is that what my parents are telling me? So I think it's really, really important to kind of look at that. So, and that then goes to the next bit is how we help clients really understand the differences is starting to understand who they were before. What did that feel like? What is that doing? How is that kind of definition, that image? And what could be a new image? And you've really got to, you know, actually, what does success feel like? How do you define it? And I think until you really explore those is what is it? Is it serving me? And then what could a new definition and image be? And to do that, it's a little bit more complicated because you've got to start to ignite the right hemisphere of their brain to really start to feel into that success. So I'll give you one more example from my personal story is I ran a really successful business before coming to Germany. And then during maternity leave, I stopped working. So every day, my definition of success was I'm going to go for a run and then I'm going to do all the washing and I'm going to do this, 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 and this. I quantified my success. And by the time my husband finished work, I'd say, wow, I've cooked, I've cleaned, and I've done this. But actually, I was lacking the presence with my child. And I'm like, is that really how I'm defining success? So that made me realize, like, actually, let's take a step back. And am I trying to do it based on quantitative things because I'm not earning money? Or do I need to start to look at what about emotions? What about presence? What about the happiness that I'm trying to create in my child? So that's where I really had to start to look at. I can't define my success by looking at achievement. And that's where it all changed. So, and that's what I want to help women with as well. And that's how I help women. But there's a lot more kind of complexity to it in terms of the behavior change that you need to go through and the belief mining that you need to really go into as well.
That's really true, isn't it? This idea of belief mining. So stripping back the things that you were told you should define success, as you say, this idea of achievement. And I think particularly for girls, and talking from personal experience myself, you know, girls do outperform boys at every stage in kind of our academic or educational journeys.
Yeah.
So we are almost drilled from the outset, from age 5, to achieve in that sense, And then we get into the workplace. And as you say, you know, the life changes, the parental transitions, and we suddenly go, oh my God, I can't do it all. Now I must be a failure.
Yeah.
So when you're working with clients, and I know you do work within organizations, mm-hmm. as well as the, you know, some private client work, but how do you get, because those must be really kind of stripped back, laid bare conversations where you're saying, but what is at the heart of you as an individual? What is at the heart of what drives you? And really stripping back what, not achievement, but what success would look like. How do you go about that? And if you're thinking of some of our listeners, where would they start if they wanted to go down a little bit of that kind of self-reflection path?
Absolutely. So we work with groups and individuals, and it's quite similar. So first of all, it's raising awareness about the societal conditioning that we've had, where we're told, for example, we can have it all. And it's understanding how we've internalized that as our inner voice. So we often see as women, you know, current into motherhood community is a great example. Women want to also still succeed after having children. They're more ambitious than ever. But what happens is, and there's a lot of the internalized speaking, so it tries to make you into a hyperachiever, so up into a liability. So it means we're striving and our negative, we end up having negative energy because we're trying so hard to use our energy just to get what we need. But actually it's not working because we've only got a certain amount of hours in the day. And actually it's probably not what we want, but it's what our internal voice is telling us that we need. So we start by looking at what are those beliefs? What are those internal voices? And easy ways of doing that is looking at what are our values once we've become mothers and how have they changed? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean just sitting down and going, what are our values? And let's work it out. It's mining those values. It's listening to the stories that they're telling. It's understanding their shaping stories, like what has influenced them as a child? What were they told were that you must do this? I have to do this. And then we listen for verbal cues. We listen for how they talk in metaphors. So how they see achievement. A lot of the time we hear patterns like, I should be further on the road by now with my career, or I should have done this by that. I must have done this. I have to do this. And that's basically your saboteurs. So we start by really listening to those. Then we start to listen to what is the impact it's having? Is it making me stressed? Like, how's it showing up in my body? And what is the impact that's having? And how's my body language? Am I having like a open body, or am I becoming really stressed and inward looking and people are thinking, this person's a bit cranky. So this is really, really powerful, is just understanding, oh, wow, this is actually, I didn't even realize this was happening. It's so unconscious. So yeah. you go.
It's just picking up that point about being really unconscious. It's interesting, isn't it? Because we're talking about, there's a lot of talk around kind of a breath work and tapping and those kind of things. But I know I can sense when I'm stressed, when I feel like I'm not on top of it.
Yeah,
it does. It really plays into body language, even just the way I'm sitting at my desk or holding myself. And then, of course, that plays out in how you show up at meetings, how productive you can be, all of those things. So there's definitely, you know, a whole sort of world that you can influence. Yeah. But I think I'm really interested in your thoughts on this as well, because it's so hard when you're trying to strip back, you know, years and years of what society has told you need to be, or the way you need to be. And I guess, you know, do you work with organizations where it's not, there's a whole phrase, isn't there, around don't fix the women, fix the system.
Yeah.
And so you can do all of this work with a client, but fundamentally, if she's then going back into a workplace or even back into a home life, which is telling her, no, you must be like this, you must be like that.
Yeah.
We're very elastic, aren't we? We just snap back into those ways. So, you know, I'm guessing you, as a coach and as an executive coach, you're working within organizations to try and shift the culture.
Yeah.
But also working on resilience and things like that with your female clients.
Oh, because it's normalizing the messiness of motherhood, and people are starting to shift. Okay, I'm not actually, I don't need the perfect image anymore. And we're all the same. We're all going through challenges. There might be different challenges. There might also be similar challenges. But the key thing is the impact. So to your point around, you know, then going back into the culture, one thing we're, the key thing we're trying to do is empower women in the workplace, but at the same time is listening to those stories, listening to the uniqueness of the voices and saying, this is the impact that your organizational culture is having. Here are some opportunities that you could actually do by even just really hearing and seeing your women and not just assuming just because you're a mother, I think that you don't have enough time anymore. So I'm going to take your team off you, which is, I hear this every week and it's sickening. So it's like, how do we actually empower organizations as well? I'm not saying you guys are naughty. You haven't done this right. It's saying, okay, this is what we're hearing. Here are some skills that you could actually start to build in your organization to really start to listen, to make women feel that they're truly being heard. And why this is important, particularly for women with a lot of research as well behind it, is women want to be emotionally connected, to feel that they belong at work. They don't just want the rational connection, which is what they get from policies. So how do we bring in the emotional connection, the rational connection, and also create that culture of belonging? So we don't just work with women, but we do work with women because they have unique challenges, but we also work with men. And then we look at how do we bring them together for allyship as well? Because it's also understanding men's unique challenges and their conditioning and potentially what their beliefs are. And how do we also support both? So it's not a conversation about women or men. It's like how as an organization, as a system, can we better support women with their unique challenges? Because we know that we're focusing on them because they do have many more unique challenges. And how do we adapt our cultural structures? And that starts with mindset. Mindset drives behavior that drives results. So many organizational change initiatives fail because they focus on behaviors, but actually it's the mindset that drives behavior. So even just by doing some simple things and raising awareness about how hyper-rational cultures can actually impact your ability to be empathetic. And even just raising awareness about the brain, like it's interesting, like even me just drawing about brain networks and brain hemispheres, people go, wow, now I understand why I'm doing that. So we're not blaming, we're going, let's educate us why our brains are working like this and let's work out how we can change this.
If you're a coach listening to this and you want to join our mission to make life that little bit easier for working mothers, then we have a limited number of places available on our coaching partnership program in 2024. You'll get access to our community of thousands of mums interested in coaching advice, in-person support with your business development and marketing, and opportunities to create valuable content library that resonates with your potential clients. Coaching can be a lonely business when you're on your own. We've got a supportive cohort of around 60 other coaches who can help you. And we bring marketing and communications tools and an active community of mums. I'm Jane, the founder of Careering Into Motherhood. And as a fellow female founder, I want to see your business thrive. And I want to help more women to access the game-changing powers of your professional coaching. Email me for more details, jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. That's jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. Now back to the interview.
Interesting. Fascinating. I love this phrase you talk about, hyper-rational cultures.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit? I mean, I'm assuming those are really high-performing teams when you've got a hyper-rational culture. But just explore a little bit for us, for our listeners, what that means and what that means to you.
Yeah. So a hyper-rational culture is when actually organizations focus so much on the rational results. So they use a lot of their left hemisphere. So it's let's get money, let's get results. It's about timelines and it's very quantifiable. But it actually blocks a lot of the empathy.
Right. And so they're not high-performing teams. I got totally the wrong end of the stick.
They can be short term, but hyper-rational cultures will never be successful long term. And I'll explain. So a lot of organizations, because they have always been, it's so systemic, they are focused on, think about when every organization, they're focusing on the revenue, they're focusing on EBITDA, all of those quantifiable, measurable, quantitative things. So that means everybody then is going, let's do a meeting. We've got an agenda. Let's not think about emotions in this meeting. Let's just get through it. But actually what they're doing is they're getting through an agenda, but then they're neglecting the emotional side, which actually will tell them a lot about insights and about the important parts about building relationships and about teams gelling. So this is stopping a lot of cultures from really bringing and really creating a culture of belonging for everybody. So we start with women, but actually it's about if we can start to make these changes, it will actually help everybody belong and thrive, not just women. So if we can start to understand why this is happening in organizations and what the impact of hyper-rationality is, then we can start to bring in more empathy and really have that balance. So it's a bit like a brain. You want to be able to have a preference for both sides of your brain. If you're in the left brain, it's the left hemisphere of your brain, then you're just so focused on results and detail and plans that your creative side gets shut off. And I'm not saying that it's still using it, but it's not maybe used as much. So what we try and do is like you can actually create cultures where you're really starting to better relationships and build a better culture by really bringing in more of that relationship side and emotions belonging in the workplace. And there's a lot of work and a lot of research from a neuroscience perspective about why emotions should belong at work and how we can actually improve cultures and teams just by thinking more like that. Rather than having it by men and women, it's about understanding how we all have our preferences, how we all have our conditioning, and how using those insights that we can really start to work together to build a much better culture and create much better environments for women to thrive in, not just survive.
Amazing. And are you seeing, I'm obviously client confidentiality, so we're not going to name anyone, but are you seeing any industries or vertical segments where they're really embracing this and doing it really well?
Absolutely. So the biotechnology space is doing this really, really well. And I think one of the reasons there is they have, obviously being in science, they're very focused on the impact of individual health and outcomes for health. And that means, you know, not just looking at the scientific part, but actually how do we help support our patients? And then they then focus on, they have much more of a people focus in general. If they're the end outcomes for their client, like for example, cancer patients, then they need to start to look at how they're treating their employees and how those employees can deliver those experiences and with care.
So they're more, you know, their line of business is more empathetic anyway, or more focused on healing and solving problems as well, solving problems for humanity. So they're playing that internally as well.
Absolutely. And there's a, you know, there's so much, because they have a lot of the, you know, obviously the rational research on the impact that it can have. And they're doing a lot. And a lot of them actually, they actually have internal coaching divisions to actually really help women. So I see a lot of menopause programs in these companies. I see a lot of women's circles, but they're still looking outside to really help make sure that they've got enough diversity of thought, enough support. So they've got safe spaces. Their employees.
That's really interesting. And I also think organizations, I hear a lot about STEM industries where I think they're working harder. They're having to work harder to be more inclusive in terms of talent attraction. And so by employing things like coaching techniques or organizations like yours, it's a real pull for people to enter those industries and want to go and work there. Where some of the more traditional ones, let's say, have yet to catch up.
You know, there's still a lot of work for them to do as well, but it's really great to see that they're starting to change. And I think a lot of industries that start to recognize, you know, the impact of AI and how that's going to impact how, you know, we need human skills. And for us to really have, you know, survive in the future of work, we need to start thinking about this. And that means showing that you're truly caring about your employees and you're listening to them, you're understanding their social needs, you're understanding their emotional needs, you're not telling them to stop being bossy, or you're not telling them to say emotions don't belong in this meeting. You're actually welcoming it, you're being curious. You know, everybody experiences emotions differently. I think, you know, there's been a really, really good lot of progress, but there's actually a lot that needs to continue to happen. And that starts with, you know, how do you create more like circles of belonging in your organization where people feel that they can be heard and they can talk about what's not working, what the challenges are, what's actually happening, not what they're expected to talk about in terms of always rationally about results or to-do lists.
Yeah, definitely. I'm seeing so much more of this blending between humans and work and, you know, work life. I always think, I don't like the phrase work life balance, because I think, especially with things like AI, with things like being always on, there is absolutely space for balance, but, you know, there is no longer this clear delineation between work and life. We're bringing work into our lives and life into our work. Thank you so much for your time today. It's gone really quickly, as always, when we catch up. Where can people find out more about you and your work, Ellie?
You can just look me up on LinkedIn. So under Ellie English, English like the language. And I'm from Munich, not from Munich, but living in Munich at the moment. So you can just look me up. And then I'm part of an organization I co-lead with Holly Rotman called Feminine Warrior Mindset. So we have a website called FemininewarriorMindset.com. And I also just wanted to highlight that we're running programs at the moment in organizations for parents where we're looking at how do we help them move from kind of chaos to calm and also be more effective in their role. And that's not about fixing parents. It's helping them with tools to really help them integrate more as they return to work, but also in those first 6 years. As we know, I know that you were saying that your child's now 9. Is he 9 or is he 10 now?
He is. No, he's 9.
Well, 9, yeah. That, you know, those first 6 years, I'm not sure about how you felt about it, but those first 6 years are that really, really challenging. Do you see it as getting easier now, or how do you?
I think it goes in waves. I definitely feel more like I have my arms around this messy thing of parenthood. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. You're absolutely right. Those first 6 years, it's amazing. I can barely function. It was every day. It seemed to just be a new curveball coming from somewhere. So yeah, absolutely concur with that.
Yeah, that's good. Well, not good, but it's glad that you kind of got through that stage.
Yeah, that it resonates as well. I think also, Ellie, it's really interesting, but I do think in those first 6 years, that is where we see a lot of mothers, not just parents, but a lot of mothers in particular, leaving the workforce or leaving their careers, not necessarily leaving the workforce, but leaving their careers because it is so tricky. So I'd love to talk to you. Maybe that's another podcast episode, but talking about from chaos to calm. That sounds great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Jane. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you. It's been great. Thanks so much for coming on. And we'll put details of how people can find you in the show notes as well. A fascinating conversation with Ellie today. Lots of neuroscience and new ideas for me. And this concept of rethinking success. I'm going to really give some additional thought to this. Ellie's ideas of measuring achievements versus success was something really new to me, and comes back to an idea that's often talked about when it comes to feelings of being enough or of self-worth, certainly as a mother. Thank you to Ellie, and please do look her up and connect with her on LinkedIn. There's a link to her profile in the show notes today. That's all for now. I'll be back next week with my guest Ainsley Keller, when we'll be talking about step parenting. Don't forget to follow along if you want to be notified of each of our new episodes as they drop each week. And thank you again for listening.